You're listening to The Baroness Kim and myself, Andy Knight. And I'm delighted to welcome into the studio our studio guest for this afternoon, Felicity Fair-Thompson. Good afternoon, Felicity.
Hello.
Lovely to meet you. And we're delighted you could come in. And lots to talk to you about today. But in particular, you are obviously a local author, but have done much in the way of filmmaking. And I know you teach creative writing. So quite a catalogue of skills and talents there, which we've got to talk about. But I would like to come to your book, The Kid on Slapton Beach, initially, which I know I'm just going to mention a couple of things, which I know you'd be far too modest to mention, but a couple of comments, reviews by people that listeners may well recognise. Actress June Brown from EastEnders, Dot, of course. She said, this book is beautiful, and goes on to kind of just talk about how wonderfully written and what a wonderful historical account it is. And also, this is marvellous. Michelle McGorian, of course, author of one of my favourite books, Good Night, Mr. Tom. A wonderful book, superb on so many levels, I couldn't put it down. I mean, glowing testimonials to a wonderful book
Very
of yours.
Kind.
Well deserved. The Kid on Slapton Beach. So, for those people listening who are not familiar with the book itself, perhaps you could give us an outline and a little bit of the backstory on that, Felicity.
Well, 3,000 people in 1943 at Christmas time, 3,000 people were forced to leave their homes on the Devon coast.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know why they were leaving.
They weren't told.
Weren't told. Right. They weren't told when they could come back.
Gosh.
Might be 6 months, might be 9 months, might be never.
Good Lord.
And they just had to find something somewhere else to live. You imagine at Christmas time, and you have perhaps no relatives, or you don't know where you could go. You've just got to go.
They're just simply told to leave.
Leave.
Mm.
And
With what they could carry, presumably.
With what they could carry. People left with prams and trolleys, and some people had car rides, but, you know, there was a lack of petrol.
And this is well documented historically.
Absolutely,
yes.
And my family, my young hero, Harry, is part of a fictional family, but they are part of this exodus of 3,000 people.
How old was the young
He's
fictional
12.
Harry? 12 years old, okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he and his mother and his little sister have to leave the area. His father is away in Italy fighting and missing. They don't know what's happened to his father, and he's very worried that his father will come home and not find them, of course.
Yes.
But they do leave, and they go to Totnes. But the man who helps them leave is the warden, and none of the kids like the warden.
Mm.
He's always bossy and telling them what to do, and they hate him.
Yeah.
But he helps Harry's mother by giving her a lift to Totnes and finding her some rather grotty accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
But Harry leaves his most precious possession behind and goes back for it. He has an argument with his mother and turns back up on the beach on Slapton Sands just when rehearsals for D-Day are going to take place. And those rehearsals go really badly wrong.
Mm.
It was an opportunity for me to explore an invasion on a British beach. I wanted to write about kids getting involved in war and how difficult it is for them, because they have to just deal with what their parents are doing. They don't have much choice. And it began to filter out, this disaster that happened at Slapton began to filter out after about 60 years. It took all that length of time.
Is this something that you did a lot of research on?
I mean, it took me 2 years of research,
really?
Yes. And even then, you don't find out everything.
No, I'm sure.
Eisenhower, who actually sanctioned the idea of rehearsing there, is not mentioned in his own memoirs at all.
Because of it being such a disaster, you think?
It was a dreadful disaster.
In what way was it a disaster, Felicity?
Well, it had a convoy, just as if they were going to land on the D-Day beaches.
Mm-hmm.
There was a convoy set out at the end of April, 27th of April. And they came round into Start Bay, which is Slapton, goes up towards Torquay.
Mm-hmm.
And at the back of the first of all, one of the ships, the accompanying to navy ships who were coming as protection to all these landing crafts, which would hold about up nearly 900 to 1,000 men on each landing craft.
Good Lord.
And the two accompanying warships, one of them got damaged as it came out of Dartmouth, so mm-hmm. it went back.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one wasn't at the back of the convoy. And in the darkness, in the middle of the night, three E-boats discovered this convoy
goodness.
And attacked the back of the convoy.
Without protection.
And it sank. They sank three of these landing crafts and damaged two more.
Mm.
And then you come to the next mistake. So you've only got one accompanying ship. And they can't transfer information because there are typos on the codes.
Oh.
Between
good
the ships.
Grief.
So
it's just disaster heaped on disaster.
Yes, absolutely. So this goes on because it's meant to be a landing that is a rehearsal for war anyway.
Mm.
So it goes on. The other ship comes and joins the first ship an hour late. So they start bombarding the beach as the men are landing.
Oh, goodness, because there's no communication.
So there's no communication.
So there must have been huge and tragic loss of life during a rehearsal.
Nearly 1,000 men lost their lives.
In this rehearsal for
yes.
D-Day.
And on the beach were the defenders, in inverted commas.
Yes, yes.
And they were using live ammunition because
really?
Eisenhower decided they needed to bloody these troops.
Good Lord.
Who were young men who had never seen anything of
any
war
action at
from
all.
America.
Yeah.
They were kind of kids out of school,
sure,
really.
Sure.
And so this whole disaster, nearly 946 men were killed on that beach in one way or another.
In one way or another. That's extraordinary. So
and
of course all
it
this
had to be hidden.
Well, I was going to say, it was all swept under the carpet very quickly, I imagine,
oh,
because
imagine
a disaster of major proportions.
If the Americans at home had
yes.
heard about this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Friendly fire, mistakes,
yes.
you know, being attacked.
Well, I've read extensively about World War II and one thing another, and I've never come across this story ever.
It took a long time
I bet
to come
it
out.
Did. So how did you come across this story initially then, Felicity?
Well, it began to filter
that was my
out.
Question.
Just
oh, right.
tiny little bits of information began to filter out. There was a little tiny piece on television in a Channel 4 programme about secrets of the war.
Oh, okay.
Just only about 3 or 4 minutes. Nothing
and this disaster, of course, in your book, The Kid on Clapton Beach, is witnessed, presumably,
by
the 12-year-old
boy.
Harry.
Mm.
And that is...
So it gives you a view that isn't
so it's from
the
his
usual
viewpoint
view.
Mm. Of what yes. he's witnessing there.
It allows you to see this unexpected thing
yes.
From a kid's
from
point
a
of view.
Point
and
of view.
That he can't understand it.
Of course.
He thinks it's an invasion.
So he actually thinks it's actually a real invasion and that people are dying, which they were, and he's witnessing this blood and horror.
And he also, when they're moving out of Torcross, which is the village he lives in at the end of Slapton Sands, he makes friends with an American, with a GI. And then they re-meet. Two or three times when they're in up in Totnes, he meets Harry again. But then on the beach, Harry sees him. And, of course, that's his friend.
Yes,
so,
of course. So it's a very personal element.
It becomes
to the, well, what
personal.
A compelling story. I mean, the narrative is compelling just in the way you describe it there, let alone reading
well,
it
it's
from
an
your
extraordinary
book.
Story.
Extraordinary.
And, of
word.
Course, it did help D-Day in the long run because
presumably.
On Utah, which is the beach that was like Slapton,
only
400 men. It sounds terrible to say only 400
well, yes.
men, but many fewer casualties on the beach when they
because
did the landing
the lessons
because
were
they'd learned lessons.
Right. Okay. Well, this is extraordinary stuff. A revelation to me in terms of a story about World War II, something I'd never come across in any way. And you've fictionalised it, but with all this basis in fact, of course, which you've researched so deeply. And an extraordinary, what an incredible story to be able to tell, though. And from this child's viewpoint, which
yes.
is even more compelling indeed.
Yes.
We'll come back to you if we may, Felicity, because this is fascinating stuff and we have lots more we want to talk to you about. But what a marvellous, marvellous account of that story. Thank you. you so much for that. And I'm going to kind of combine two things here, because a moment or two ago when I was chatting with Kim and we were talking about the Brit's Choice Awards, the Critics Awards, and I mentioned one of my favourite receivers of that award a few years ago was Florence and the Machine, yes, one of my favourite bands. Right. And one of their songs from earlier this year, which kind of ties in a little bit there, which I'd like to play now, is Ship to Wreck. Song Florence and the Machine, Ship to Wreck. 27 minutes past 2 o'clock. You're listening to Vectis Radio. The Baroness Kim and myself, Andy Knight, with you through until 4 o'clock. Delighted to have in the studio with us this afternoon a locally based author, and that will be Felicity Fair Thompson, who is has been talking about her marvellous book. What an incredible story, The Kid on Slapton Beach. More about that a little bit later. But if we come back to you, if we may, Felicity, and a little bit more about yourself, because you're not a native islander, although you come from a very large island. island, of course. The world's largest island, to be fair, I think it would be good to say.
I was born in Australia.
Of course.
Actually, I was born in Tasmania, which is...
Really?
Island to island, one
island
might say.
Island to island, yes. You really have an island background, don't you? There's no disputing that.
But I didn't stay very long in Tasmania. I left there at 9 months old, so I can't really claim that.
So what brought you from Australia, from Sydney to the UK and to the Isle of Wight?
Well, I came over as a dancer. I was
okay.
Ballet orientated. And then you couldn't make enough money as a dancer. Mm. So I eventually decided to give that up, and I went to work for the Rank organisation.
Oh, okay.
And I was senior assistant manager at the Odeon Leicester Square.
Good Lord, really?
For 8 years.
Wow, so fantastic. And you must have seen some real red carpet events there then.
Amazing.
Yeah,
it was exhausting, actually, because you had at least one charity or royal performance a week.
A week?
And there were press shows, and there were things going on all the time.
But, I mean, that is the nation's cinema. I mean, that's where it all happens, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Where all the premieres are.
And at that stage, in those days, the Odeon and what was then called the Leicester Square Theatre, but it is now called the Odeon West End, although it might have gone back to the Leicester Square Theatre, they were run as one. You saw the house in on one side of the square, and then you'd walk across and see the house in on the other side, and then walk back and deal with the intermission, and etc. etc.
That's quite a geographical jump, but it's also quite a sort of career jump from ballet dancer to managing the country's leading cinema and more.
Well, I wasn't in the manager, but I was senior assistant.
Yes, I mean that's still an extraordinary role to have taken on there.
And
that's marvelous.
And you did get landed with some amazing things. Talking earlier about the IRA and bomb threats and all sorts of things going on at all.
Yes, of course.
At the same time.
Yeah. So this would have been in the 70s.
When you think about the things in Brussels and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
Used to get a phone call and you had to make the choice as to whether you could clear the theatre.
So you had to make that executive decision, yeah.
Mm. So from London to writing,
then we left the bright lights of London and came to the Isle of Wight to run a holiday business.
Oh, okay.
Holiday flats. And that was amazing because, well, if you remember, there weren't the sort of phones that you could carry about. All phones were on a string.
Yes.
Well, back in the day, we used to have tin cans down here, if I remember.
But I had to have a phone that was on a long enough cord to be able to just carry it round with me all the time.
I see, yes.
Because the phone would ring as soon as you put it down, it would ring again.
Wow.
The holiday trade at that stage was so enormous.
Yeah, when was this and whereabouts on the island?
This is 1977, in Sandown.
In Sandown, okay. All right.
And you had to...
But why
the
island? What made the island...
It was just the best business.
Oh, I see. It was a business decision to come to the island.
Yes.
Excellent. And you've been here since then?
Yes.
And
I love the island.
Oh, great. Well, you've grown to love it from a businesswoman into...
Oh, it's a beautiful place
wonderful.
To live.
Oh, lovely.
Really, it may be old-fashioned, but it has some lovely standards. You can say hello to everybody in the street. Everybody knows each other. They care about each other here.
Mm. The community sense we have alluded to many, many times, have we not?
Definitely.
And I think it's quite extraordinary here on the island, and the sense of community is so
wonderful.
Powerful. It really
it's
is.
Wonderful.
It's wonderful.
People will help each other, too.
Yes. Yes, very much so. So you've been here since the mid-70s or late 70s, and have been involved as an author in writing many successful books.
Well, after getting involved with the holiday flats, for something extra to do, I began making travel films.
Yes, of course. So you have quite a back catalogue of documentary and travel films.
I've made 14 films in my time.
Of what sort of travel areas?
Well, the most recent was Carisbrook Castle, which was shown on Sky.
Ah, right, well done. But
it's a retail unit.
Yes.
And then before that, I made a film about swan upping on the Thames. That wasn't about the Isle of Wight at all.
No,
but
sure.
That was amazing thing to do, to follow the swan markers up the Thames.
Yes.
That's the best pub crawl in the world.
Lady after my own heart.
Wonderful. I have done
that. Well, they stop at every pub that has anything to do with swan in the title.
Excellent.
And there are quite a few.
Oh, and there are quite a few. I don't know how they stand up in the morning to row. And watching them hoik the swans out of the river and count the cygnets.
Yes.
And the vintners and the dyers and the queen's swan markers go.
Wow. So it's amazing. What an incredible tradition, though. I mean, it's still,
One of the nice things about that was that I was able to get permission to do it because I still knew the people at Buckingham Palace because of the Odeon.
Oh, because of the
Royal
Premier.
I still
knew
the press office people at Buckingham Palace, so I got permission to do it.
It all helps, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All that stuff.
Connections.
Yeah, absolutely. All those connections. Wonderful. Yeah. And so you're a resident of the island. You love it clearly now.
Yes.
And writing is a full time job for you now? Or?
Well, I teach writing at the college.
Ah, yes. College, creative writing.
Yes.
And how long have you been doing that?
Lovely students there too.
Really, how
really
wonderful.
Lovely students. And I've had about 16 people who have written books and had them successfully.
From your students' base. So
that's really
what
nice.
A great testament that is. What a wonderful legacy as well to be able
yes,
to say
it
that.
Yes, it is nice to be able to pass on information about how you do it.
Yeah, that's
to
wonderful.
Other people.
So a fairly busy lady, I think it'd be fair to say, one way or the other. And we want to come back to you, if we may, in another few moments' time, Felicity, just to talk one or two more things about this marvellous book, The Kid on Slapton Beach, which I know people will be interested in where they can get it. Because it has a Christmas element to it in the narrative, that I think it might be something that people will want to search out. So we'll come back to you, if we may, in a few moments and talk some more about that. Thank you, Felicity Fair-Thompson, our guest in the studio here at Vectis Radio this Tuesday afternoon. Coming up after these, we're going to go back to the summer of 69, just because we can, with Brian Adams.
This is Vectis Radio.
Serving the Isle of Wight and beyond.
www.vectisradio.com.
Brian Adams, of course, there. Summer of 69. It's 18 minutes to 3 o'clock this Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to Vectis Radio and to the Baroness Kim and myself, Andy Knight, with our studio guest, Felicity Fair-Thompson, author, filmmaker, writer of all sorts of extraordinary things, past dancer, assistant to goodness only knows who at the Leicester Square Odeon. I mean, you name it, she's done it. She's been there from Tasmania via Australia to Sandown. There you are.
What a life.
What a history of yours. So I'm just an extraordinary life. And such a pleasure to meet you. And going on from what we were talking about a moment ago, if we may, Felicity, about your mentoring these young writers at the college, and 16 of them, you say, now actually published, which is absolutely marvellous. I just noticed this because I would like to mention ways that people can get in touch. I'm sure a lot of people will be going, well, this is marvellous, let's find out more, either to get hold of the book, which we'll talk about a little bit more, The Kid on Slapton Beach, but people can find you in the Learn to Write, because you were also talking off air about the fact that you actually home writers if they come to stay in with you in Lake, which is an extraordinary thing, and you can mentor them one-to-one in gorgeous surroundings of a writer's own home, which is marvellous. And the website for that, if I might just quickly mention, is all the W's, www.learnwriting.co.uk, learnwriting.co.uk. And you were just mentioning to me that people can also track you down, as it were, through the college, through the creative writing department there.
Yes.
This mentoring, and you were mentioning young writers with special needs, and I was particularly interested in that. Tell us a little bit
more. Yes, I've worked one-to-one with young writers to help them produce a book. And I've had two people so far produced a whole book, and it's thrilling for them. They have such wonderful focus.
Yes.
When they're really interested in something, they
focus
on it.
We provide a 4Ps project, as we call here, which is for disadvantaged young people, and they come in and they learn to produce their own radio shows. And I'm not equating that with what you do, but I mean, it's a similar sort of parallel.
I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
I think
to give them that opportunity.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful chance for you, yourself, to pass on the information that will help them get off the ground.
Of course.
And it's an enormous achievement, and they can take it into school or to their parents. One of my students won a poetry competition because she came in with this really interesting idea, and I thought that would make a wonderful poem. And we worked around it, and I got it into the poetry competition by about 1 minute. And she won.
And she won.
And
how wonderful.
Quite right, too. You know, she worked really hard on that.
That's tremendous.
And isn't that great for self-confidence?
Well,
of this is just so good for the youth. It's just brilliant.
But I think that whole point about giving young people of a disadvantage or otherwise the opportunity to get this kind of wisdom and knowledge and skill passed on from someone of your standing, think, I mean, is an extraordinary opportunity for young people right here on the island. And, you know, we feel very much the same about the four-piece project that we can offer in terms of facilities here. You know, a professional studio with all the facilities that you could require. And just to give young people that opportunity. And as you just alluded to, Kim, I mean, that, you know, the self-confidence, you see it, physically see it grow and blossom. And you must witness that as well with the writing.
It's wonderful to see. Really wonderful.
Extraordinary.
And it happens in the creative writing courses at the college too.
Of course.
Because they're not just for young people, they're for any age. I've had 90-year-olds.
Really, how wonderful.
And it's a wonderful thing to see people who have a story inside them be able to achieve it.
Of course. Absolutely wonderful. Now, if I can just bring you back to something that we started off with back at the top of this hour with the kid on Slapton Beach and the D-Day story that you were telling us about. Fascinating. And I would urge anyone to read this book if you're just an avid reader, never mind whether your interest is in war stories or not, because this is a particular story about young Harry. But you were saying from your viewpoint in Lake Sandown that looking out to sea there, and that was really interesting. What were you saying?
Every morning, if you look out to sea in Sandown Bay, you might see four or five ships on the horizon. And on the morning of D-Day, very, very early, almost at night time still, off the end of the Isle of Wight, the western end of the Isle of Wight, it was called Piccadilly Circus. There were 7,000 ships 7, massing 000. There. And I remember somebody who was 15 years old at the time telling me at a do that I was doing for the D-Day because of the book, saying he could remember it, and it was like the sea was black.
Extraordinary.
It was amazing.
Extraordinary.
Absolutely amazing.
Incredible. I mean, just it's impossible to imagine almost, isn't it? 7,000 ships, as you say, just gazing off the coast of the island. But if we come back to the kid on Slapton Beach, as I mentioned, which we started off talking about, and I think it's important that we mention to people, because of the sort of Christmas element to it, the links with the island and the D-Day and everything that the history leads back to the island in many ways on, there are lots of places you can get the book, and you will know them all. I know you've given me one or two ideas here. Here on the island, Waterstones, of course, we'll have it as a new copy, but you can pick it up also at the Oxfam Books and Music Shop in St. Thomas's Square, which is really important because obviously they need the income as well. So it is possible to pick copies up there as well. So the Oxfam shop in St. Thomas's Square, Waterstones in the middle of town, of course, and various other places. And of course, it is actually published by White Diamond Press, and information on the book can be found at White Diamond Press. You can look their website up, all the W's, whitediamondpress.com. And you'll find details on how you can order through the publishers should you wish to do it that way. But a great Christmas present idea for anyone.
Fabulous idea.
Anyone. I mean, it covers all the bases, really, in terms of just a fabulous story, apart from anything else at all. Felicity, it's been an absolute delight and a pleasure to meet you, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's been thrilling. I really enjoyed myself.
Fascinating. This interview will, of course, be available on a podcast from our website at vectisradio.com, so please do recommend your friends to listen to it, because it's a fascinating story and a fascinating lady. Felicity, thank you so much.
Thank you.